The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, with John Mueller. Mondays and Wednesdays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
South of the border, down Mexico way, that's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to...
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the one-of-a-kind show that tells you what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. So let's get started. Just to finish up on a few things about the last show, where I was talking about how it's almost impossible to read your electric company bill down here, and how, in fact, it's as confusing as, or possibly even worse, than your electric bill up in the first world. Anyway, I alluded to the fact that almost every company down here, including government institutions, are trying to modernize the way they do things and are doing everything possible to copy the way they do things in the first world, right or wrong. And that's why you get such an indecipherable bill down here, just like you do in the first world. And that's where that first world comparison ends, at the electric company office, where you get that official-looking, first world-style bill that you can't make head nor tail of. But when you step out that door and you get out into the real world, where you actually get the power delivered, it's still pure third world. And to give you a good example of what I'm talking about, I'm going to read out of yesterday's paper from Managua, Nicaragua. The news comes from a town outside Managua called Milagro. Okay, here goes, so listen to this. More than 15,000 persons in Milagro have been without electric power for more than 6 days. And a spokesman for the electric company claims it's because there's so many illegal connections to the power poles made by people he calls midnight power thieves, and that bands of delinquents have been stealing cable and cutting down power lines in isolated rural areas and reselling the copper, aluminum, and steel to scrap dealers. And that spokesman for the power company says they cannot guarantee the security of your connection until they iron out those and a handful of other problems. And you know, that's not an isolated case, because every Latin American newspaper has a story just like that practically every day. So that begs the question how you, as an expat, can assure that you have constant electric service to your house and your business. I mean, you don't want to have to worry about driving to your business one day and finding out the power's been off for 8 hours, and all the food in your freezer's melting and dripping on the floor. Now that would not be good news, especially if you owned a restaurant. But whether you get constant good electrical service, or brownouts, or even long-term blackouts, it's not just a roll of the dice. If you keep your eyes open, it's not hard to tell who's going to get good electrical service and proper maintenance, and who's going to get the short end of the stick. It's the same thing with the quality and type of paved roads they have down here. All you have to do is look around, and you'll see some roads that have so many potholes, they look like the surface of the moon. And just a half a mile away, there's a beautiful paved asphalt road, and even the occasional extra wide and nicely planned concrete road, though I admit, those are few and far between. And it turns out the quality of your electric service, and by the way, your municipal water service too, seems to follow the quality of the road infrastructure. In other words, if you build your house or set up a business on a dirt road, or one that has a million potholes in it, that's about the kind of electric and water service you can expect to get. That is, substandard or even worse. And you might wonder why that is, and why it seems to follow that pattern. Well, it's something that every expat figures out once he or she has lived down here a while. And after you've made all the usual expat know-it-all mistakes, anyway, you soon find out that near every good stretch of road, there seems to be a subdivision or colony of wealthy or upper middle class people. And when you see a stretch of high class concrete road, you can be sure that road was put in because a politician, cabinet member, mayor, governor, or other high level politician lives right on that road or very nearby. And down here there's a word for that. They call it cuello, which to us means pull or friends in high places. In other words, all those little far out isolated towns where only a handful of powerful and influential people happen to live. Well, those dusty little towns, they really get the short end of the stick in more ways than one. And when you're driving through one of those off-the-beaten-track towns, if you happen to hit a nice stretch of asphalt, or even concrete, you can be sure it's in the wealthiest section of town or the route that the mayor takes to work every morning. So keep that in mind if you're looking to buy, rent a house, or start a business. Okay, but back to the question of power outages and how to handle them. I can tell you that the first time I came down here, about 20 years ago, every Latin American country I visited had at least a half a dozen power outages a week. And you know, you'd be sitting on the porch of somebody's house, having a nice tropical drink, and the power would go out for like 3 hours. And it got to be that you could almost count on it. Then, over the next few years, something changed drastically. Well, the Soviet Union collapsed, and government started privatizing and selling off state industries to the highest bidder. Suddenly, third world governments were selling off everything and anything they had and raking in the cash. And all the Latin American presidents and dictators realized it was a golden opportunity and the window was open for a one-time shot at enriching themselves, their friends, their families, and their mistresses. And that opportunity was never going to come again. And even though, in almost all cases, there were a lot of public strikes and walkouts involved, and even quite a bit of sabotage and destruction of public utility equipment, and that's a whole other story. But as you might have expected, the people that worked at these utilities were very upset. You know the drill. People in the streets throwing rocks and burning tires. Those kind of protests by public employees down here are all too common. It all boils down to the fact that everybody wants to keep their nice, cushy government job. Even though all the government-owned utilities were models of inefficiency and, in fact, absolute disasters, the fact is, if you're living in a country and you've had terrible service all your life, and you're in a government make-work job, and you're sitting on your dead ass doing absolutely nothing, and still getting that paycheck every month, whether you show up for work or not, that to you is the norm, and you just don't know any other way. So as Latin countries began to privatize their utilities, those very same public utility employees took to the streets. And in fact, they and their bosses were the very reason why those public utility companies were managed so poorly, and why all those power outages were a fact of life down here, and everyone either had to put up with them or go out and buy a generator. And I can tell you, a lot of expats did that. And by the way, while I'm talking about generators, all you expats out there know, it's better to buy a small diesel generator than a gasoline one. Why? Because although a diesel job costs a little more, you can get about twice as many hours of runtime on a gallon of diesel than you can on a gallon of gasoline. And down here, diesel, on the average, is about 50 cents a gallon less than gasoline. So you get a double savings there. Not to mention the fact that diesel motors last about twice as long as gasoline motors. That is, before they need an overhaul or heavy maintenance. And finally, diesel motors are much less complicated than gasoline motors and have fewer moving parts, so there's less to go wrong. And as to why you always pay a third to 50% more for a diesel motor over gas is that diesel motors are always built with much heavier duty parts. And that's because they're operating at higher temperatures and pressures than gasoline motors do. So your expat tip for the day, buy a small diesel generator. And the smallest ones I've seen are about 4,000 watts. And for a generator that size, your diesel motor might be 5 or 6 horsepower. And anything between 4 and 6,000 watts is just fine for any home or office. And if you have a diesel one, you could run that thing for days and days without a problem. And you can figure it this way. A 4,000 watt, that is a 4 kilowatt unit, works out to be about a 40 amp electric circuit. And I'll tell you right now, you can run just about everything in your house on that. Except maybe an air conditioner, an electric dryer, or an electric stove. And believe me, if you have a power outage lasting more than a few hours, drying your clothes and turning on your air conditioning are going to be the least of your problems. And as for cooking your food when there's a power outage, you should always have a small camping grill around the house, like a Coleman, or one of those tiny Weber charcoal grills, or even a single element hot plate. And do I really recommend that you get a generator like that? Well, 20 years ago, I would have said yes. And then a few years later, I would have said no. And that's because when all those governments sold off their electric utility companies, and the ones that didn't at least partnered up with a first world company, and when they did partner up, usually 50-50, the first thing the new partner did when they came in was to overhaul the infrastructure, at least in the big cities. Well, that changed everything down here. at least for a while. And suddenly, those power outages that we were all so used to, little by little, became less and less frequent. And in some cases, pretty much disappeared altogether. Except, of course, during that odd natural disaster like a hurricane, a flood, or a windstorm. But who can plan for that? So anyway, with all those first world electric power distribution companies coming down and buying into these dinosaur operations, with plans to rewire everything and modernize just like the first world, and they proved that they could do it, because some of the big cities down here have large sections that are completely up to first world standards. But unfortunately, parts of every big city, and at least half of the rest of the smaller towns, appear to have been wired by a one-armed drunk. And I'm not kidding. In fact, I'm amazed to see that some of these circuits even work at all. And for these new first-world utility partners, it was logical for them to start rewiring in the big cities. That's where they had all their hundreds of thousands of customers, who they already had on their books, who they could little by little slip higher rates to, so they could afford to tear out that rotting infrastructure and start from scratch. And that's practically what they had to do. Well, anyway, the plan actually began to work. And you could see the proof of that when new subdivisions went up. Suddenly, new home buyers and business owners had all the electric power they needed and more. And the guys from the electric company that arrived on the scene to do the work, they were actually dressed in clean uniforms with nice trucks and first world equipment all the way. And if you had a problem with your electrical service or a tree fell and knocked your power line down, they'd actually show up within a few hours after you called that emergency number printed on your bill. And that in itself was a miracle. Because when the state owned the electric company, sometimes the repair guys didn't come for a week. And 9 times out of 10, if you called that emergency number on the bill, it either wouldn't connect at all or you'd get a busy signal. Now you might be wondering why these governments even bothered to sell off the state-owned company, especially when all those public workers were marching in the streets. Now, that's a lot of votes. Well, the answer is always about the money, right? But how do these big wigs in government pull off those billion-dollar sales when the public knows they're just going to steal most of the money? Well, it's because down here, almost all that stuff occurs behind closed doors. There's no transparency. And I watched it happen firsthand in 3 different Latin countries. First world electric power distribution companies came in, and they bid on all or part of a country's electric service and distribution systems. And though those deals were reported in the local papers and huge numbers were thrown around, in fact, most of these public utility franchises were bought out for hundreds of millions, even billions of dollars. And of course, that money is supposed to go in the public coffers, right? But there was virtually no transparency. In other words, nobody but those political insiders knew anything about the real details of the deal. And in the end, millions of dollars in cash changed hands under the table, greasing the deal along, and suitcases of cash made the rounds and got deposited into foreign bank accounts. And in most cases, every politician remotely connected to the deal got rich. And if he didn't exactly get rich, he got a car, a house, or a condo out of it. And the funny thing is, in the papers and in the media, it almost never got reported until some years later, when these guys were out of office and reporters began picking up on the fact that these ex-politicians that were making $10,000 or $15,000 a year, that is, poverty wages in the first world, well, once these guys get out of office, their whole lifestyle changes. Suddenly, they're living in million-dollar beach houses, driving Range Rovers, and sending their kids to private schools in the United States. And you know, that's how it's always been down here. There's no transparency, and that's what happens. And that's why down here, nearly all the rags-to-riches stories involve politicians. Big surprise, huh? So anyway, back to our discussion about the electric utility companies down here. So about 10 years ago, just when these first-world electric distribution people came down and bought in, when it was beginning to look like the blackouts and the brownouts just might be a thing of the past, and whole sections of cities were being rewired to first world standards, even those rat's nests of overhead wires were getting dismantled and routed underground. Well, things were moving right along until the big banking and financial crisis hit hard up in the first world. And along with that came the bursting of the housing bubble, and oil went over $100 a barrel. Now the problem is, a lot of countries down here don't have enough power plants themselves So they've worked out deals to buy power from their neighbors. And though you might think there's a lot of hydropower down here, only a few countries have it in a big way and are actually self-sufficient. The rest of them, believe it or not, use a lot of diesel for power generation. So between Latin countries, there's all sorts of deals and all kinds of contracts regarding straight electric power, the sale of diesel, and the right to use power distribution lines. And those deals a lot of times end up in dispute. And that almost always happens after an election when there's a change of government. Especially when there's a radical change in government, like what recently happened in Honduras, a few years ago in Nicaragua, Bolivia, and Ecuador. Just to name a few. And we should mention Venezuela here too. Because as one of the top five oil producers in the world, and of course it's all government owned, you'd think that they'd have plenty of energy for themselves. In fact, with gasoline at less than 10 cents a gallon down there, they shouldn't have any power problems whatsoever, right? Well, you'd be wrong, because they're having rolling blackouts and brownouts daily as we speak. But in their case, it's because the power company is state-owned and all the oil reserves are state-owned, which makes for a massive bureaucracy that's not only corrupt and inefficient, but it moves like a snail. So even if they have plenty of raw material, like diesel coming out of their ears, they're still steeped in that tradition of what government does best, which is basically nothing. So anyway, as for pretty much all of Latin America, those power outages and rolling blackouts that used to be a thing of the past, well, they're starting up again. The fact is, expats have noticed that in the last year, the bad old days seem to be coming back, not so much in the newer built-up areas, or in those privileged areas where the political bigwigs live and they have those nice asphalt and concrete roads. It's funny how the power almost never goes out in those sections of town. But mostly, the power outages are hitting hard and heavy in the sticks and in the boonies. Like that news article I mentioned in the beginning of the show. So, facing that good news, what do I recommend for expats down here? Well, like I said, besides locating your business or house in a newer upscale subdivision or residential tower, preferably in an area with nice asphalt or even concrete roads. And by the way, don't think that things like this, I mean rolling blackouts and brownouts, can't happen to you up in the first world. Because believe me, they can and will. And if you listen to any of the other programs on PRN, you'll know that a lot of experts are predicting that we're in for a rough ride. So what's happening down here in the third world right now, I believe is just a little preview of what's going to happen up north in a few years. So up there or down here, you better be prepared. But as for living down here, you're going to need that diesel generator. And even a small 4-kilowatt job might set you back $1,000. And as for buying a used one, yes, they're out there. They're in the classified section of the papers all the time. In Spanish, of course. But for generators, it's all about the hours they've been used. So if you're looking at a used one, have it checked out by a diesel mechanic. Unless, to you, it's obviously very clean, lightly used, and in good order. Because like I've said 100 times, they don't believe in the word maintenance down here. So if something looks well-worn on the outside, you can bet it's well-worn on the inside. So, just a word of advice. But here's another little tip I have for peace of mind when it comes to electrical power. These days, you can go to any Walmart or Ace Hardware, or go on the internet, and you can find a 12-volt DC to 120-volt AC converter unit. And it's called a DC to AC inverter box. Now, all you RV and Winnebago owners up in the first world know what I'm talking about. You hook it up to the car battery, or your Winnebago battery, and the box itself has a couple of regular 120-volt AC wall outlets on it, just like in your house. So once you hook this thing up to your car battery, and it's easy, it just bolts or clips right on to the two terminal posts. And then, after you do that, you've got 120 volts all day long. And you can plug in your TV, your computer, your refrigerator, whatever, depending on the capacity of the converter that you buy. And the trick is, while the power's off and you're using this unit, is to leave your car running in the garage or the car park. And while your car is idling away, it's always charging the battery, and the battery is providing you with 120 volts AC for any electrical appliance you might want to plug in from your house. Now, as for me, I bought a 1,500-watt converter box from a Walmart down here, and it cost me $100. Now, for those of you who know about amperage and voltage, that 1,500-watt unit gives me pretty much the equivalent of a 15-amp household circuit. In other words, with my converter box, I can plug in a refrigerator, which consumes about 300 watts, and I can plug in a plasma TV, which consumes about 300 watts, a computer and some lights, until I get close to that 1500 watt limit. And these converter boxes, which are no bigger than a small shoebox, they spell out on the back a list of appliances that you're able to plug into your unit. That is, before you reach its limit and pop the circuit breaker. So what this little converter box really is a light-duty replacement for that diesel generator I was talking about that you always had an idea to buy, but you never did because it cost $1,000, whereas this little converter box is only $100. You have to admit, $100 for a converter box like that is mighty cheap insurance for a blackout. And in this case, it's your car that's providing the power, not a diesel motor. And even though you have your car idling while that little converter box is working, your car is still using gasoline. And using the motor on your car to run a few electrical circuits in your house is not really efficient at all, in terms of gasoline usage, that is. And that's the downside of using one of these converters and not buying a generator. But it really works in a pinch, and that's why I have one. And in the past year, I've used it 4 times myself. 3 times when the power was out for 3 or 4 hours, and 1 time when the power was out for 2 full days. So expats, for starters, and to be minimally prepared, you should get one of those little converter boxes. Because the outages seem to be getting worse, and you never know. Now, before you all send me emails asking me exactly what little unit I'm using, the one I got from Walmart is from a company called Wagon Tech, WAGANTECH. And it's a 1500 watt AC inverter, that's what it's called. And it's actually good for double that, or 3000 watts, for very short periods of time, like when you switch on a motor, for example, a refrigerator motor. For example, if a refrigerator is switched on and it's rated at 300 watts, in that instant that you first switch it on, or when you hear that motor kick in, for that split second, that motor draws about 3 times as many watts, or in the case of my 300 watt refrigerator, 900 watts, right? And for the rest of the time it's on, it's only drawing 300 watts, just like it's rated. But that's a special case that only happens when motors are switched on. If you turn on a light bulb or a computer or a television or a DVD player, it's only going to draw the wattage stamped on the side of the unit and no more. So that's good to know. When you switch on anything that has a motor, it's going to draw triple the amount of current for that split second. And that's why sometimes when motors kick in, circuit breakers blow. So as far as electrical energy goes, in the future, down here in Latin America, just like in the first world, prices are never going to go down. And now that the first world has dragged the third world into their housing, banking, and monetary crisis, I personally believe the predictions that in the next year or two, prices are going to double worldwide. And you could see those prices creeping up already, especially in oil, the energy sector, and commodities. And since down here, everything is much cheaper in general compared to the first world, except oil and energy, it's not a good bet for an expat just to sit back and watch those electric bills escalate without doing anything about it. Every first world engineer I know believes that the ultimate answer to the energy crisis down here is the massive use of solar voltaic panels. Because if there's one thing Latin America has, and it has in excess, is sun. And I know right now that if I spent between $10,000 and $20,000, no more, I could put together a solar panel system on the roof of my house that could not only supply me with 100% of my energy needs for that house, it could also provide all the necessary energy for all my transportation needs too. But that would mean I'd have to buy an electric car. And right now, there are at least 4 major car companies that are producing them. Nissan, Chevy, Peugeot will all have their own versions of a true electric car available next year. And if you correctly size the solar panels on the roof of your house, you could charge that electric car and be completely off the grid and never buy gasoline again. Now, as for the solar panel system, the battery backup, and the necessary converter, well, those things are getting cheaper and smaller by the month. In fact, the solar panel system I'm talking about that you could get for $10,000 or so today, you couldn't have bought 10 years ago for $50,000. And within 5 years, that system's going to be smaller, better, and cheaper yet. And as for me, the only reason I haven't bought into that system yet and I don't have a solar panel set up is that I'm waiting for the price to come down on those electric cars, because this will pretty much be the first model year where big companies have mass-produced these things. And right now, they're too expensive and priced at around $35,000 to $50,000, which means it's really not economical to get one yet, just like the Toyota Prius was when it first came out. It was way too expensive for what it really did, and only tree huggers and celebrities went out and bought the first round. And now you can get one for a little over $20,000, which puts it pretty much in everybody's ballpark. And that's just what's going to happen to these electric cars in the next 5 years. And when they do drop down to around $20,000, I'll get one and put that solar system in. And after that, I'll laugh every time I pass by a gas station and every time I plug my car into my own personal electric outlet. But as for now, we're all playing a waiting game on that. And you know, there's another thing. Down here, that's going to be a great business for expats to get into. Imagine a one-stop shop for prepackaged solar units with the capacity to run the whole house and with an electric car in the package. Someone's going to have to stock that stuff, assemble it, and get it working. And that someone's probably going to be an expat. And when the price is right, who wouldn't want to buy into that? I mean, really, who doesn't want to get over on the oil and the utility companies? They've had their claws into us for 100 years, and now it's our turn. And speaking of those solar units now, finally, a company out of Germany has patented a way to produce solar panels on an assembly line for $1 a watt. Now that's the magic number. At $1 a watt, a solar system for the average first world person is easy to afford. In fact, a family of four that's into conservation only needs 4,000 watts, that's 4 kilowatts, of solar panel to get completely off the grid. And at $1 a watt, that means that panel will only cost $4,000. And you could thank those Toyota people for developing that Prius lithium battery, because those are terrific when used in combination with solar panels. And they're much, much more efficient and smaller and lighter than your standard old lead acid battery. And the new generation of lithium ion batteries have a life of about 10 to 20 years. So all that's right around the corner. So for all you expats and expat wannabes, that's good news. I mean, imagine living in paradise, not having an electric bill, and never having to go to the gas station. Unless, of course, you have to use the restroom. I take that back. Forget the restroom. You're better off holding it till you get home.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Mexico Files, Living in Latin America. And don't forget, you can email me on anything at all about Latin America. TheExpatFiles@gmail.com. That's TheExpatFiles@gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.
South of the border.